Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast, and also known as the March Sadness Show. I'm your host, Kyle, and joining me tonight, got Vanta Trading's Baba Yaga, Mr. Banks, got our very own Flary CRE, and a special guest that Flary set up for us. Flary, you want to give us a little bit of background on what you got planned here for us?
Yeah, I've been following a great Twitter account for a little bit now and, kind of engaging in some questions about scalping and trading bonds. You know, I like to try to stick my toe in the bonds pool until it bites and then I pull it back out until I feel comfortable again. But anyways, a great follow, great content. So I figured what's the worst that can happen? He can say no. So I reached out to 2-year Jeff and, he said, yeah, I'd love to come on. And so, just a cool opportunity to learn from a seasoned bond trader. And I hear a crypto trader as well. So excited to come jump in.
We haven't done crypto yet. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so thanks. Thank you.
Crypto donator. Thanks for joining. Donator.
Guilty.
Well, it sounds like we should get the self-promotion stuff out of the way so we can just jump right into the conversation. So I'll kick it over to Baba Banks if you guys got anything you want to share, anything going on at Vanta.
Well, I'm back. I was gone all week.
You might actually know what's going on.
Next week will be
fun. All right, fair enough. Flair, you got anything going on you want to shout out?
No, man. I guess shout out to the Bulls.
Oh.
Just dip buying. Right at the edge all week, so
that might have been one of them.
I'll give credit where credit's due.
Sorry,
Yeah, everybody in our room was one of them, actually, minus myself.
I was on Wednesday, just, you know, Tuesday and today.
Right.
Right at the edge of death.
Tuyo, you got anything you want to promote? You got anything going on? People can follow you? Newsletters?
No, you guys all, no, I don't do any of that stuff. I'm not very good with all this technology stuff. I know how to do trading stuff. That's about it. That's why I have kids. They tell me how to do everything else.
I was a little worried that you were on here with Flary trying to troubleshoot your issues. Flary's normally the guy that we got to help walk through too. I swear every time he opens up Discord, it like crashes every other audio system he's got installed on his computer. Yeah.
I try to stay off Discord because that's where all the crypto stuff is.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, I can't tell you. It's like everyone goes, you know, the funniest thing about the crypto is like, oh, well, you just have to hit on like one out of every 10 meme coins. I'm like, dude, every 10 meme coins I do, it's like, there goes a soul, there goes a soul, there goes a couple soul. And it's like, then you'll double one of them. I'm like, yes, I'm out. Man. And that's the one that goes 10X. I know. Great trade.
That's like the story of my Phantom wallet this week is like just down and then one goes up. I cover, I'm back to break even, and then it goes like 100X by the time I wake up. I'm like,
oh, all of them do. Anyone that I get out of or I don't get in are guaranteed to be good.
Oh, yeah. Let's see what we got. For show news, we got next week's guest, Niels Koop, founder of trader.com. That's trdrr.com. And you guys say thank you to a Discord member, Trader Salguero, which I know I'm butchering that name, for setting that one up. Banks, you and I are going to be recording the next installment of our economic miniseries with Eric Mason on Tuesday. So if there's any other questions people have for that, feel free to send them in. You can do that via Twitter at FinancialNept1, join the Discord, and slide into our DMs, or visit the website, fill out the forms on there, whatever. Let's get this conversation moving. 2 year. I was a little nervous, man. We were checking this morning after I think Flary sent you the link for this, and your Twitter account suddenly disappeared.
You know what happened? I've been trying to join spaces, and it keeps denying me in every space. Huh. So I've reinstalled on my phone. I've done everything, and then finally I'm like, screw it. I'm just going to cancel the account and restart the account. So, and then when I was at, I was frustrated at work. So I didn't bother to reinstall, like do it. And then I'm like, I was driving tonight. I'm like, oh shit, I didn't reinstall Twitter. So like the second I got home from picking up my kid, I'm like, oh shit, I got to do that real quick.
How many miss?
I get sidetracked.
I was nervous because I was looking through some of your past posts. I was like, he might be in timeout right now.
Oh yeah, I have. I've been suspended once or twice from Twitter for stating I have some strong opinions about certain things.
Well, we'll still clear those today. We don't need.
We'll stay clear of those. Right. It's never about trading.
We'll keep you out of timeout.
All right, well, I'll just open things up then. You guys got questions for 2 year? Let's start hitting them.
I mean, would you mind just giving us a little bit of a background? I know I gave you probably like a B-level intro, but where do you come from? What do you know?
Well, come on. Right after high school, my first job was on as a runner at the Board of Trade. And I was back in 90. I started in the summer of 92 as a runner on the Board of Trade. And I was in the corn pit. I was going to go to college at the end of the summer, and then a broker offered me a job. I thought it was too good of a job to pass up. I took the job, and I was an arb clerk in the corn futures for 2 years. I dabbled. I went into the corn futures pit. It was not for me. I got out kind of no harm, no foul, and I ended up in the bond room. And right there, I just knew what I wanted to do. Like the bonds actually spoke to me, and I was one of the first guys with the screen in the pit.
What does that mean?
I had a handheld in the pit. So right when TT came out, like 98, 90, like I was in the pit and I had a handheld. So that's when it was kind of side by side, and you would get some really screwed up. Like there were a lot of times like the spread would be trading and it would be negative one at even, and the screen would be at negative five. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy negative fives, sell negative one. I mean, four ticks, they would just hand out layup fills.
Oh man, that sounds amazing.
And then I was okay. I wasn't a great pit trader by any stretch. I didn't really have the relationships. They did ice out guys who had the screen, And I happened to be friends with the clerk of the biggest trader in the bond pit, who at the time was Chip Kenyon. And he offered me to do his screen for him. And I figured, well, why the hell not? I mean, he offered me an unbelievable salary. And for 2 years, I mean, I was doing a million contracts a month on TT, you know, on his behalf. No. But I got to learn the screen inside and out, like every little glitch, every little tick. I mean, there's nothing better than learning, you know, it wasn't my money. I had nothing. I mean, hey, I had a job. Like if I saw Goldman say, hey, we're selling 1,000, I'm not even, I'm telling Chip, hey, I sold 500 on the screen for you. Because it's, you know, it's fair game once it's flashed.
Right.
So, I mean, that was my job. I was to beat orders. Like if Goldman, whoever else, Merrill, whoever the players were, you know, first Boston, I mean, I had an eye on their desk. So I had to watch the screen. I had to know what Chip's position was. And as soon as I saw stuff flash, I hit the screen for him.
See it, hit it.
So essentially you're arbing the
pit. It was arbing the opportunity from the TT. And so, I mean, I had a handheld for Chip. So, I mean, I kid you not. I mean, Chip was probably a third of the volume the screen first came out. I mean, this is back when the screen was only, wasn't doing that many a day. You know, the screen was probably only doing about 100 to 150,000 a day, but I was entering 30 to 50,000 of them. I mean, that's how busy he was. Like he took anything and everything.
When there's that much edge, like what you were describing there, it seems like that isn't going to last very long. How long until people started crowding in that?
Oh, everyone got into that. I mean, and then it came. You know, Chip would wonder like how I was getting beat. You know, like if another trader had a handheld, I could tell Chip, hey, it's going bid. Well, the other trader's looking at it and they're already lifting the broker before I can, you know, there's going to be a second delay in that. So, you know, towards the end, it got frustrating, that part of the job. But for the first two and a half years, oh my God.
I mean, that much time though? I'm surprised. Oh, yeah. It went good for that long.
Yeah. I think those traders, you know, so Chip ended up retiring and I ended up going to trade for myself after that. But the trader stayed in there, I want to say through 2008, where it was a pretty nice arb, you know, where there was some nice action before it really just went, you know, all screen. I mean, the only times it was ever busy in the pit after that were treasury rolls. They would give those guys the orders and I would actually flash orders into the pit. Because I found it was easier to get an edge in the pit than it was on the screen during treasury rolls, or you could get more size on.
Interesting.
Were the funds and sort of like the bigger corporations and stuff like that, were they the last ones to make the transition? So they were sort of the dinosaurs still doing outcry, or I would assume just because of like you know, legal and whatever. Getting to the technology piece is probably slower for them.
Yeah, they were a little slower, but I mean, the brokerage side, you know, went pretty fast. Like, I mean, when Dave Ryan, he was the biggest 30-year broker. I mean, he had to have like 15, 20 people working for him. Trade checkers, arb clerks. When he started to leave, he left probably in 03-ish, maybe before 02. That's pretty much when the brokerage side, you know, they were kind of using both. They were like, hey, where are we going to get the better edge? And I think it was a money issue because it was more expensive to trade the screen when I first went in there than to execute a trade in the pit. It flipped, you know, by the time I left, it was more expensive to do a trade in the pit.
Yeah. Once everyone made the move, the fixed income
were the guinea pigs, like the full members, the agriculture guys, you know, those are the guys that have the yellow seats, the full seats. You know, the fixed income guys only had AM, so they had the second highest seat. We were the sacrificial lambs on that. Like they knew, you know, the grain guys held the pit hours. I mean, that's why the grains are only traded. If you look at the grains, they only trade 8:30 to 1:20 on the screen. They close it down until 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then they 7 to 7. So they have a couple different openings a day, whereas fixed income, I mean, it's like equities. You're basically 24/7. You get an hour reprieve. Mm-hmm.
So you started as a runner or as a clerk and worked your way into the pits. We're arbing TT into the Outcry. When was the transition to trading, you know, for yourself or at home or in the office?
When Chip left, when he retired, I went off on my own and I just had a confidence. I mean, I had entered so many orders on TT, pretty much knew TT inside and out. I mean, the things I can see on TT just from all the orders I entered on his behalf are just, you know, would blow people's mind what I know, you know, what I can see on that screen because of that. And again, not many people, like I said, that's a huge edge to me. A huge edge came from entering his orders. So, I mean, I traded for him. I mean, I after he retired, I traded for myself. I was in the third year from probably 05 until, when did they go half ticks? Bonds won half ticks, I think, in 08.
Was that the other flipper that someone was talking about? The somebody in like the UK that was...
Oh, you know, no, that's the real flipper.
Paul Router, yeah.
No. Yeah, he's the okay. real, like, that's the king. That's the goat. Okay. So then after when the bonds went to the half ticks, it was basically an untradeable contract. I couldn't scalp it anymore. So I had to kind of reinvent myself, and I reinvented myself in products using the K-Algo. So I don't know if you're familiar with the K-Algo.
I don't know what that is.
No.
So the K-Algo is what the, in a nutshell, what the two-year algo is it's a 40-60 algo. 40% is FIFO, 60% is pro rata. So if there's 10,000 on a bid and somebody sells 100 into it, they're going to sell 100 into the bid. Whoever's first in line gets 40. Now, Kyle might have 100 lot and he's next in line.
That would be me.
But
yeah. I'll take your spot, Kyle.
But I'm going to be sitting there going, well, I've got 4,000. I'm 4,000 of the 10,000. Well, I'm going to get probably 40.
Right.
So it's a percentage. And I know that algo. I know that algo better than the guy who wrote it. I couldn't write the algo. But in terms of trade, you know, applying it to trading, I know the rules of that algo inside and out.
So, I mean, that's just affecting like who's getting filled then, right? So how does that beneficial then knowing how that works? Is that just like kind of manipulating it so you can kind of jump the front of the line to get your sure. fills kind of thing?
Like, for instance, in the 2 year years ago, I knew if a guy sold I'll make up the number at 725, if he sold 100 lot.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you the next 25 orders to the exact second when he was going to execute the rest of the day.
What?
I knew it inside and out. So now I know the K algo inside and out. So now I can look at, now you tell me, okay, so now all of you guys are on the bid and you've been sitting on the bid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, there's 10,000 there. And let's say there's 80 orders. So I'm going to be like, okay, there's 80 orders there. That means the average size is this. Let's call it 100. I know it's not. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know this guy's going to go at this exact second. 1 second before he flashes, I'm going to click in 30 orders, 105. I beat all of you guys, and I'm out there for 1 second. And I'm going to get a one lot on each one of them.
How long did how did you figure that out? Is that just a lot of like trial and error, like watching the tape and like understanding it? Or?
A lot of it was from what I learned from Chip, like on the orders, but catching the just being able to know the market like that. I still see timers. It's not so much recognizing timers that I'm good at. It's knowing how long they're going to go. Like that's the whole key to a timer. Like if I know that guy. If I watch him go at 725, well, I know he's going to go at 725, 725, 30. He's going to go every 30 seconds to 729, 30. Then the next time he's going to start at 830 even, go every 30 seconds to 840, 830, 430. Then I know he's going to go at 1230, 130, and 2.
How?
It's just the timer. That's what this, it was.
Is this unique to bonds or is this something that all markets kind of have?
I think all markets have it to a degree. I mean, I see it in, look, the tape is too fast for me in the NASDAQ. It just, I can't process information that fast. I mean, I can kind of see what's going on, but I'm wrong. Like my reads are wrong a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I'll get myself in trouble. I'm not as disciplined in the NASDAQ as I am the bonds. Like the bonds, I literally have three outcomes. I'm either scratching a trade, I'm winning on a trade, or I'm taking a one tick. Those are my three outcomes. It's one tick, or scratch. And to be honest, 80% of my trades are scratches. I put in, I scratch, 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 scratch. Because commissions are nothing to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a seat. They don't mean anything to me.
Oh, so you get a better rate.
So, I mean, right. Yeah. So, like, if you don't have a bond membership, like, I put this tweet out a while ago, like, you know, per 100 trades. So, if I do 100 trades at 20 round turns, at 20 contracts each, that's 2,000 contracts. So, 2,000 round turns is going to cost me about $840 all in. Hmm. If you don't have a membership, that's going to cost you $4,000.
I'm in $4,000. Yeah. If that.
So, $4,000. So now you got, if somebody's sitting there at $4,000, they're $4,000 in the hole. Well, they got to make on six trades just to break even. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I need to make on two trades to break even, 2.5, you know? So that means I got to make on 3 out of every 100 trades and I make money and I'll hit it a better percentage than that, but I don't have to hit it a huge percentage. And, you know, I guess people are confused when you said, well, how are you successful if you only make on a, you know, like say 8 to 10% of your trades? I go, I'm scratching the other 90.
Yeah.
So, right. You're
not taking full losses.
That's my net. It's not like I'm making on 10, scratching 90. No, I'm probably making on 15. I'm losing on 5 and I'm scratching 85.
The key is you can afford to scratch.
I can afford to scratch.
Yeah.
Right.
It makes zero difference to me.
So there's one of the guys in chat here. Macro, him and I, we work on a few bonds trades, and from a stats perspective, the cost is the thing that keeps a lot of the like actual plus EV or positive EV strategies away from sort of like guys like us that don't have a seat from trading. Like we have a three tick strat that crushes, but you only make like 3/4 of a tick per trade, and you just can't afford to take scratches. Like you can barely afford to sort of execute the strategy without decent commissions. But, you know, again, like to your point, like with a seat, all of a sudden, you know, you can scratch and then that 3/4 tick, you're just realizing. And
yeah,
it's interesting to hear you say that that's sort of the, like if you had to pay retail commissions, that strategy essentially is gone.
I couldn't trade how I trade. I'd be broke.
Right. Right.
I'd be broke. I mean,
so that tweet,
yeah,
you kind of stole my thunder a little bit. Two of the tweets that I was sharing with the guys today was your sort of like scalper math that I really wanted to dive into. So, you know, that was kind of enlightening that you don't think that your strategy, like you said, you'd be broke. You can't trade that way. Then the other one was just the timers thing. Like yeah. I went through your time or your, you know, whatever they call it, Twitter feed now, X feed, just searching all that stuff about timers. Like that's such an interesting concept to me that, one, algos would just like have X number of business to do throughout the day so that they need to execute. And they're just like, they're set on a time specifically. So it's just like price agnostic. They just have business to do is the assumption there.
Yeah. The technical term I think is TWAP, time weighted average price is what they call it. So, you know, essentially like if you would look at the bonds today, like this is where I excel and where I see things that other people don't. On Monday, I noticed after the 2 o'clock close, there was a buy timer. He was aggressive. He was buying anywhere from 25 to 35, and he was going anywhere from 5 to 10 seconds. And I'm like, wow, I mean, this guy really moved the market. He moved the market 7-8 ticks after the close. That's a significant move after the close. Mm-hmm. And then he did it again on Tuesday. And he takes Wednesday off because it's the FOMC, but he did it again on Thursday. And I'm like, well, I was like, hey, I know
he's going to,
I knew he was going to do it again today. So as soon as he did it, he started at 26, 27. And I'm like, screw you. I know you're buying. I'm going to race you. I'm going to lift a tick as you're going. Cause I know you're going to keep buying 25, 25, 25, 25, 25. Eventually I'm going to catch time on my offer. You know, that's a huge part of like just understanding everything about those timers makes a huge difference in trading. for me.
Can you, before we move on here, you said 2 p.m. is that Eastern Standard?
Oh, sorry. So 2 p.m. Central. I'm
2 p.m. Central.
So okay. I'm Chicago. So it's.
Oh, I'm in Pekin.
Okay.
South of Peoria.
There we go. So you trade the grains then?
No, grains? That's Jim Scalpert. No. I barely handled NASDAQ.
So
no, but I do want to go through and replay that. That's on UB or which?
No,
which
ZB.
Product was that?
ZB.
Okay.
I do not know UB at all. To be honest, it's one of the products I try to avoid. I have traded it. I'll trade it during the roll because it's thicker, but. It's not a product I really enjoy trading. And I like trading big tick products because one of my strategies or theories trading, whatever you want to call it, is I'm like, look, $31.25 a tick. I'm only paying, let's say 50 cents a round turn. So my wins are going to be $30.75. My loss is going to be $31.75. That's only a dollar spread. I can handle right. that. That's not a big spread. Like if I were a non-member trading grains, for instance, I mean, that's $12.50 a tick. That's $4.50 a round turn. So if I'm a win, I'm going to win $8. On a loss, I'm going to be at, what, 17? Dude, I mean, right. I'll go broke, on my hit rate. I cannot survive with that kind of spread. So I want the tightest spread possible. The bonds give you the tightest spread possible. I mean, I did the 2-year for years when it was 1562 a tick, but the 2 years used to be a quarter tick back in, what was it, 18 or 19? I think it was 18.
I think it was 19. I looked when you were.
Yeah. In January of 19, Martin Luther King weekend, they made it an eighth of a tick and they destroyed the contract. The CME. Mm-hmm. The CME just screwed the pooch on that one.
And how does that hurt you? Is it just because you can't get as much because you're only going for one tick? So when they, decrease it, it makes it harder to get.
It's $7.81 versus 15.62. Okay. I don't want to trade something like it's not the NASDAQ. It doesn't move that fast. Right. I get why people can make I watch the NASDAQ and I've dabbled in the mini NASDAQ. I'm not stupid enough to. Throw size out there in the NASDAQ because I don't want to get hurt, to be honest.
Do you mean micros when you said that? Or
yeah. I'm sorry, the micros.
Dabbling in the minis. Oh my God.
No. I dabble in the micros. I'm sorry. Okay. There's no way I'm throwing size out there because look, I like trading 20 lots. I like trading 50 lots. Like if I see something I like in the bonds and I read an iceberg, I'll sell 200. I don't care. If I have a good read on it, I'll sell 200 because I'm like, look, my skill set is the best edges are in the shortest time frames for me. So I'm like, look, I can tell you where the market's going to be most likely in the next 5 seconds, next 10 seconds. I can't tell you where something's going to be in an hour. I'm not that smart. I'm like, look, if I see something in the bonds, I see an iceberg and I know they need to buy. Like I was commenting on the January Fed funds the other day. I trade a lot of funds. I knew somebody needed to buy 47 and a halves. Knew they needed to do them. I'm like this guy needs to buy 200 to 500 contracts here and he's stuck. So I joined the bid with him. I got a 50 lot off and I just offered it right away at 48 and he lifted me at 48 and that was a quick $1,000. I mean, the funds always take longer than you think. So it was probably a 4 or 5 minute trade, but I had the edge the whole time. I was like, I know this guy needs to buy.
Right.
And if I had any, I don't want to say ball, yeah, but yeah, if I had any balls, I'd hold for two ticks. I know the guy needs to really do more. It's just not my DNA. My DNA just says, these are the only two boxes that matter, the bid and the offer. It's all that matters to me. Everything else is noise to me. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two boxes that matter to me.
So are you 1-to-1? So you're basically one tick profit, one tick loss.
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting in on market or are you getting in on limits?
I am getting in on market.
Okay.
I try to catch the turn. So there's a lot of times I'll go bid off or bid offer and you can be damn sure I bought, sold. I'm trying to, catch the right turn. Now, typically I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not going to buy and then just say sell twice. No, if I wanted to buy, I saw something that really wanted me to buy. If it goes sellers, I'm offering, and then I'm going to try to catch it again. I'm going to look for some kind of edge to make me want to buy it again.
Yeah, I've seen some people be pretty tight with bonds, but I've never seen one tick as a stop. It's incredible.
It's, you know what, but the bonds allow you to do it. Like, I would actually, the 10-year would be great. My issue with the 10-year is it's a pretty thick book. I want to say it's like 2,500 to 3,000. Yeah. Yeah. And you go, well, and everybody's answer to everything is, well, if you want 20 ticks, you know, and that's $625 a tick in the bonds, you know, when I scalp a 20 lot, they're like, well, just do a 40 lot. I'm like, well, yeah, then I'm doing 40, but I'm doubling my commissions here for the same amount of money. And it's a thicker book. It's a longer trade. It like the bonds, I can literally get stuff off within 30 seconds to 2 minutes. It's not true in the 10 years when they're not moving. I'm going to catch an edge. I'll be stuck in a trade for 10 minutes. I don't have my attention span isn't that long.
Are you doing all these manually too? Are you manually clicking the buttons on these things, or do you have a algo or something?
I do. I use an algo for my outs. So for instance, if I buy a 20 lot and I'm going to get a 5, a 10, and a 5, OCO is going to enter the orders 5, 10, 5 for me. So if I'm buying 20s, it's going to offer them right at 21 for me. Mm-hmm. And now I'm only managing the scratch. And I say I'm only managing the scratch because I expect to scratch every trade. Mm-hmm. Every trade I put in, my sole goal is to scratch it. That's all I want to do with the trade.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So just to clear up on that, so you're basically marketing in, and as soon as you mark it in, you're going for a scratch.
Well, I mean, that's my thought process. Like, I want to watch it. Like, I want to catch the bid. Like, there was one today I caught. Like, I literally, as I bought 20, I didn't get all of them. And somebody put, there was 700 on the bid. And I was literally, I think I got like 7 or 8 of them. I was the next 12 contracts. I'm like, thank you. I've got 700. These people need to buy. And it's when that buy timer was going on. This was post 2 p.m. It was 27s was the lift I did. And I know, I'm like, this guy's got to buy 8s. And literally he bought a 24 lot at 8, went down to 300, went right down to 300 on the offer, And it took me a while to get my 7s. Like, that's the only time I'll get an edge on the bid, when I know I'm first, when it's my market. Yeah. I mean, it'd be silly to cancel. But what I won't do is, what I've learned to do is, if I caught that turn and I only get 8 and it goes 28 bid, 29 bid, I lose interest in the 7s. I don't want them anymore. I don't care if I'm first or not, because so many variables have changed. By the time we get back down there, I might not like it. And typically what happens is you sit there like 600-700 up. And I'm like, come on, somebody just trade them. Somebody just trade them. And they hit them all. And I'm like, well, that serves you right. You're providing a market for somebody to hit. It's not my job. I don't want to provide a market for somebody to hit.
Right.
I don't have any interest in that.
That makes sense.
All right. Let's Macro is asking a couple questions in here. He wants to know if you trade the SOFR at all, or just the funds.
Just the funds, because SOFR is a CME product, and I don't have a CME seat. I have a CBOT seat.
Okay. And then he was asking about how you scratch it, or if you're watching the time and sales and seeing if there's enough there to get out, or
for the funds or for the bonds?
The bonds.
For the bonds, I'm literally just watching the tape. Like, if somebody would look at my screen, I posted a lot of screenshots of what I look at on the change in delta. I'm very particular at what I look at with the bonds. First of all, I think anybody who trades without sounds in any market, I think, is trading at a disadvantage, because your eyes plays tricks on you. Your ears never miss anything.
Interesting.
So I literally have Bose headsets on, and I could close my eyes, and I could just listen to what's going through on the size. And I could tell you, I could close my eyes for 10 minutes. I guarantee you, I'll probably be right on the market on what it is. If I open up my eyes, if they say, hey, what's the market? I'll be like, It's 23, 24 now, and it's, you got a better offer than bid just by listening to the sounds through the market.
Okay. All right. Hang on. We got to mine this one a little bit. So, you're going to have to, like, what kind of sounds, I assume this goes back to like your pit days, like taking advantage of like having the sounds of like hearing people getting excited in the pit, right?
Sure. I mean, you know what? I mean, I traded, when I left Chip, I went to an office at first and I did well my first 2 years. And then it happened when the bonds weren't real, when they went down to half ticks, I went back down to the floor because I wanted to hear the roar of the floor. I wanted to hear what was going through in the options pit, because at least while I don't have a phenomenal understanding of options, I know the basics. I know if I hear a lot of noise, big orders going through and it's going to be get busy on the screen.
Right.
Even if I can't hear, like I couldn't hear the 10-year pit or the 10-year options, but I could hear the 2 5-year options clear as day.
So with the sounds then that you have playing in your ears, is that just for time and sales type stuff, or you have it for other things too?
Nope. I have it for, so this is not so much for the bonds, but for the Fed funds, but I use it in the bonds as well. So I have different pitches on my, through my TT. Mm-hmm. So I won't, anything under 50, I'm not interested in. I have zero interest in it. Below 50, I highlight everything 25 and above in my time and sales, because those are the timers I'm interested in. Once it gets 25 or more, mm-hmm. I'm interested, because that's enough size to move the market.
Right.
You know, you keep pounding 25 lots out. Like if I don't want to see a timer, somebody's doing 101 lots, it's not going to do it. That's not going to tell me anything. Mm-hmm. But if I know this guy's buying 25 lots, I want to see him highlighted. So mm-hmm. I'm like, ooh, here's a timer, and I could spot a timer pretty much after the first, like before anyone even sees the second order, I can say that's a timer.
Just oh, wow.
Based on time, based on what time the order is executed.
Oh, like what, the millisecond stamps? Are they like round numbers versus?
No, it's not that, but I do advise everyone every day. I redo my clock on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Sync it.
And I set the time to exactly what time it is, because that makes a huge difference. I don't want to be off a millisecond on the day. You know, computers, if you let it go, like every weekend I come in, my computer is a good 5 seconds off.
Wow.
So
scalper nuggets going on right now. Let's go.
I do want to know. So back to the so the time. So I'll have different pitches. So like for the bonds, 50 to 99, there'll be a couple different pitches. And then it's a longer pitch if it's 100 to 100 or 100 to 200, if it's 250 and up. So, I mean, there's one day I was trading in the Fed funds and I have these things. It would literally make your ears bleed if you heard 5,000 and above on my thing. And one day I forget the day. Yeah. I mean, the pitch is just, I can remember one day somebody did some huge size. I had to, like, I threw my headsets off my head because it just killed me that much. Like, I was like, what the hell is like, but I knew they were all sells,
right?
Because of the pitch I had.
That's such a fascinating idea. I don't think I've ever really heard anybody kind of talk about that, like using the audio cues. In fact, I actually turned most of mine off and now I'm thinking I need to go back and, like, you know, re-enable those.
I think for size, I mean, like I said, I don't know enough about the equities. It's everybody else's ballpark. I don't know enough, like, what you would want to see for size.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. There's got to be numbers that, hey,
yeah,
anytime this clip goes through, I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it would be so hard for me to say what's a timer in the mini S&P. Mm-hmm. What is a timer? Because I mean, I watch that book now. After watching the NASDAQ, I actually think the SPOOs are scalpable. Yeah. Whereas once I mean, you look at the NASDAQ, I'm like, look, people could trade the NASDAQ. Anyway, I don't know anyone who could scalp it. Not successfully. I'd get killed. I'd blow out within 3 days if I tried to click the NASDAQ and try to keep up with it. It would destroy me.
I can't even click the mouse fast enough to actually have it execute where the price is actually trading at.
I would recommend everyone else to have programmable mice.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
So I have a programmable mouse. I've got four buttons on my mouse. I can right click and it's my position. Then I have my, you know, my left click, which is my trigger, my right click, which is my max click for said product. And then I center scroll to center the market. Always center them. Yeah, you have to have it. Like, and that's why I don't use hotkeys anymore. I used to have hotkeys. I used to trade with hotkeys that I could lift and do everything on. But I found the mouse. I was just quicker on the mouse than the hotkeys.
Yeah, I need to make that switch too. I'm still trying to use hotkeys and it's not good.
I think they're awesome. I think hotkeys are awesome. I just don't think they're...
it's not fast enough. My hand is always on the mouse.
It's not fast enough. Your hand's always on the mouse. You take your hands off and then you hit the wrong button. I mean, I idiot-proofed it for me, you know, to say, hey, I just want a buy and sell button. Well, right. If I didn't have the... Well, what really bothered me was the little rectangle where those things were screwing up my view on the market. I couldn't see the glitches.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons I got rid of it. I was making too many mistakes. I mean, I joke about my wife doing it. I can't tell you how many times I just, back when the bonds were thicker, that I would fat finger 50 or 100 and just, it's like, geez, I was walking down the street and I just threw $1,500 out. Like, here you go. Right. Take it. I don't need it. I can't tell you how many times I've done that on fat fingers.
I know sometimes my hand gets a little twitchy when you're hovering over that scratch button.
I was going to say, yeah, the mouse probably scares me more than me like double clicking. But like to your point, I reach for the keyboard and then, you know, you're like shift up or whatever.
Right.
Like, my market buy is super simple. It's just like shift up. But like I'll be so quick, like you said, like I got to get off my mouse and then up to shift. And by the time I do that, I hit the thing three times on accident because I'm so, you know, whatever. But that makes sense.
Baba, you use a mouse. What do you have set up on yours?
I have market buy, market sell, limit buy, limit sell, and a flat and all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have four. I mean, I have other keys on here, but the front four on the there's actually 12 buttons, but the front four, I mean, my finger lives on the front two, which is market buy, market sell, and flatten.
Do you find that's cleaner to execute with that versus hotkeys?
Oh yeah, man. Like I had hotkeys for like 2 days and I was like no, that, I mean, I've had that for years. I mean, it was a quick change for me. As soon as I started trading with Sierra, I started using hotkeys. I think hotkeys, mouse program, mouse.
Yeah.
You know, and there's other things that, you know, they can, you know, you can link them to other charts, you know, so versus having to click the window to pull up a different view or whatever, you could have them. I mean, you can, if you get a programmable mouse, you can really use the macros to your you know, to really customize your deal, but
switch between your brackets and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Nice. The only thing that gets tricky with it is for me is the consistency between charts. So at one point I had a chart for like one chart that I would execute four contracts. It was set for four. One chart was set for two. One chart was set for one. So if you're on the one chart, but you think you're popping off four, that's disappointing. And conversely, if you're on the four chart and you think you're popping off one. So if you know, if you're tap tap to go two or tap tap to go four.
I was just gonna say the tap tap gets expensive on the four.
And you go tap tap and you're in eight or tap 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 and you're in, 12, that's a little different on the big full size NQ. That's
it's a little butt puckering.
It can get away from you. So that's the only thing. I just set them all to be the same at this point, and then I just click more than once or whatever. But
right,
yeah, I highly recommend that. Also, the audio cues is an interesting thing that you mentioned, Jeff. I have a couple of audio cues set for the NASDAQ for certain size orders that are executed at market. So different tones, and then a certain tone for specific time frame. So as we pass every 30 minutes, I get a tone that remind me, hey, we've transitioned. It's actually every 22 and a half minutes, but close enough, right?
I think you need, like, audio is huge.
Yeah, I think I never thought of it as from the pit side of things, although that's very interesting. I thought of it from... There was a time where I didn't want the large, the bubbles to show up for large market orders, like on the chart. Or if I wasn't staring at time and sales, I wouldn't see the highlighted large orders or whatever, if you're just, not locked in. But I always have earbuds in, right? So you would hear ding, 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 or whatever, the bid and offer have a different, market sell, market buy have a different sound. So yeah, you can program that with Sierra.
Yeah, I think Dan, when he was still trading, was I think he had a bear and a bull for large buys. That's and funny. Large sells.
Now, you remember like 2 weeks ago, I was working on building another chart on the chart book, and apparently had some audio cue turned on that I could not figure out. That's incredibly annoying when you have this, certain cue going off like for an hour during the day, and you can't really slow down enough to go figure out where it's coming from, but it's just nonstop. I think it was beeping like every 5 minutes or something. I don't know why, but I figured it out. So,
thank God.
Macro had a question a minute ago. Do you want to hit that?
Just about to read it here. He wants to know if you change your style or execution to your when you're in a regime that is in price discovery mode, it's like such as in 2022.
I change my style all the time. I mean, like right now, if you're going to ask me, I don't even. Look, I elect to drive my kids to school in the morning now. I don't get in to start trading bonds until 9:30 or 10 is when I start trading bonds. I want the price discovery. I want it established now. So I think he's referring to like market conditions back in 22 versus now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think you constantly have to change how you look at the market. Like it's working right now what I'm doing, but I'm always on the eye. Like, can I increase my size or do I need to decrease my size based on market conditions? Like, it's one of the reasons, like, I don't trade economic numbers. I traded the Fed yesterday because I just saw Wednesday because I just saw pure stupidity. every once in a while. So a lot of times I tell people not to do things. But in general, I get in trouble the faster the market in the bonds because there's so many algos fighting. Mm-hmm. My reads aren't exactly right. And I think I see something and I don't really see it. Mm-hmm. And my eyes will play tricks on me. And then, next thing you know, I'm down like five trades. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't your strong suit. Wait for it to settle down. I don't like trading runaway markets. Not my strong style.
That's funny. He just used my trigger phrase. What you said right there, that what am I doing right now? That's That's what goes in my head when I know I'm about to do something really, really stupid.
Hey, I've been doing this for a long time. I still do stupid stuff.
Right. Oh, there was one other question here. It wants to know what's behind you there. Is that a lizard or a snake?
It's a bearded dragon.
Oh, I've seen those. Those things are cool.
Yeah, he's mine now, I guess. We got it from my son last year. He said he was going to take care of it. Shockingly. Like the dogs, my kids don't take care of it.
I've got two cats just like that. I was going to say.
How old's the son?
The bearded dragon. Oh, wait. That one's 13.
You got two more than Baba does, I think, right? I think I saw that in your bio. You got seven kids?
Seven.
How much sleep do you actually get?
I used to, now it's pretty easy. It's just my
own. Yeah, now. Right. 10 years ago, you got none.
Okay. My wife's a rock star. She, the only time I had to stay up at night with anything was when we had twins.
Oh, yeah, you got twins in there too?
I took care of that. Yeah.
Yeah, we basically had twins. We had them in a weird way. So we were
the mailman.
Yeah, no. Well, no. Now you're all going to feel bad for laughing. We were trying to get pregnant and we couldn't for a while. And so I was like, oh, well, I mean, I don't know. And so we got a phone call about an adoption for my daughter's biological brother that the family was pregnant again. And so we were like, oh, this would be cool. We'll adopt my then adopted daughter's soon to be born biological brother. And then we found out we were pregnant after saying like, yeah, all guns a blazing. So we had two boys 4 months apart. So not quite twins, but really close.
That's twins.
That's pretty much. Yeah,
they're twins. All in the same, it's in the same area. It's not like you're like, yes, this one's, they're like, no, they're both going to get out of it about the same time. Yeah. Sleeping through the night and stuff.
Oh man.
I'd love to add, like, so this is your approach to bonds and trading in general being smaller time in the market and, you know, real fine tuned to like one specific, you know exactly what you're looking for, ding, ding. And it's, you know, you're one tick to break even the whole deal. For me, this has been, you know, I've been trading for not as long as you, but long enough to have done a lot of different stuff. And there was a point where in the NASDAQ, you know, my trade horizon was much closer, smaller trade, you know, smaller time in the market, smaller size. and then gradually the goal for me was to elongate the time in the market to capture larger amounts of points, maybe be able to trade a little bit less size, da 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 da. As you kind of, and I know it's different between bonds and NASDAQ, obviously, but what is it or what was it about that smaller horizon that kind of locked you into that? Like, what keeps you disciplined, I guess, on the one hand, and also just like focused on, hey, this is what I do, one tick, you know, boom boom boom, because it's obviously working. But what keeps you from wondering about, you know, one handle moves in the bonds or something? Like, how do you navigate that? Because there has to be a large amount of times where you are trading 20 and you're filled on 20 and the price continues. Do you take multiple entries on a leg?
Look, you know what, I think it's just how I was, you know, I came up as a pit, and, you know, you just pick up things from traders. Like, I happened to sit in the, I was lucky enough to be in the room. Like, the amount of traders I've been around, like, I was around Chip. I was in the same room as Igor, like the Igor from the S&P. I sat in the same room with him for 4 months. I watched the biggest S&P trader in the world, you know, at almost his peak. Wow. And there was another gentleman in there, Doreen. He was from the Ukraine, I believe. And he was a huge 10-year basis trader. And then there was Woody, who to me was the best scalper I've ever met in my life. Like, Woody, he showed me things in the the few months I was there, he showed me things that I could never thank him for. He was able to scalp bonds, scalp the spoos, scalp the net, like put them in any product. He could scalp and scalp it successfully. And I think it was just ingrained in my mind. And then Tommy Grassafi was another big guy at who helped me. He was the one guy who told me the only two boxes that matter are the bid and the offer. That's it. Everything else is noise. And I took that and I took what Woody taught me. But everyone who was showing me things was basically showing me one tick, one tick, one tick. So it just got ingrained in my mind. Like, come on, I catch edges and you go, well, my God, why didn't you hold that 20 lot? You know, it was good for a point. You took zero heat on it. It's kind of like a meme coin. It's like, why'd you get out of this one? That's the one that won 100X. You were right. In on it. It's like, because I can't win
100X.
How many times I haven't had. Right. Like, how many times, like, the way I look at it, like, for your question, basically, is I might think we're rallying on the day. Like, I do have a story. I do have an opinion on the market. My opinion will change 1,000 times. But at the beginning of the day, I have an opinion on the market. Like, this is what I think bond should do today. So I'm going to be looking to do this. If I catch the edge on a bond, you know, if I buy 20 at the low of the day, let's just say I caught the low, it's going to go up a full point. So if I would have held it, it would have been up $20,000. I might still finish up $20,000, but I'm going to have 400 trades because, you know, I'll always want to try to get long, but buy, sell. I don't really care. Scratch. I'll try to walk it up.
Yeah. So you're working the move, basically.
I'm working the move. And to be honest, a lot of my best trades are counter trend. Like, I just see what's going on in the bonds is picking up icebergs. I think that's if people can really learn what an iceberg looks like. I think I tweeted it last Friday. There was an iceberg at 16 in the bonds. The second I saw it, I knew that guy had to sell 1,000. I watched the iceberg. It traded 800 times. I'm like, dude, this guy needs to sell these things. And I didn't hesitate. I threw 200 on there. And reloaded, there was 1,000 there, and I was first, and I got filled. And I mean, I was leaning on 1,000. I knew he was there.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, I'm 15 bid. Now I tweeted that I was looking to buy 08s that day. That's where I wanted to buy. So how somebody would look at it is, well, why didn't you hold 16 to 08? You know, like, that's a huge win. Right. I'm like, I don't know that. Like, this is $6,250. It's like, here, it's on the table for you. Do you want to take it or do you want to risk it? And my view is, well, I'll take it. I just want the money. I want to close the trade out.
That's the other question, is how many of those ones that, for every one that goes a point, how many don't? How many only give you a tick or two ticks?
Right.
Or go half a handle and come back in your face. You know, I mean, that's right.
And that's what would drive me crazy about the NASDAQ.
The mental capital is like.
There's a lot of times, like, and come on, I'm doing like the micro NASDAQ, and I'll work into like four or five of them. I trade a little different there, and it's like 10 points in my favor. I'm like, all right, I'm good at this shit. And I get distracted in the bonds, and I'm like, wait, how am I red? Where am I red?
Yeah, you're out. You're wait, down 30.
I was just up.
Yeah.
I was up. Like, I was up 10 points.
Sometimes you can sneeze and it'd be down 20.
Somebody could sneeze and that's like, it's like 200 points in your face. You're like, yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm a big Delta trader. I like to nerd out on Delta and volume in general. But I guess question for you, you know, you've mentioned icebergs. You've, you know, kind of talked about lifting. Because essentially, if you're marketing in, you're expecting somebody to lift with you, right? So,
sure.
Essentially you're looking for two ticks if you're willing to pay a one tick spread. Would you say that a passive bid getting soaked, right, or whatever, or soaking like an iceberg, is more dangerous or, you know, better to lean against than sort of an aggressive market buy or positive delta in, you know, in your market, or do you sort of weight them the same?
I don't like passive. I don't weight them the same. I don't like the passive guys at all, unless I get a good feel that I know they're going to, you know, buy. And I think the passive guys are very difficult to get a read on. I really do. The aggressive ones, that's where I get a read, is the guys who really need to do something right now.
So intention matters. That,
you're right. That's what matters to me. Like, that's one of my skills. It's not even the timer. Like, it goes back to the timers, why timers are important. Well, why is a timer important to you? Well, if I know this guy's buying 25 and I know he's going to go every 15 seconds, based on the time he starts, like there's times I've tweeted, I say, hey, if this timer goes past 2:15, he's going to go to 3 o'clock.
He's going to go
to 3 o'clock at the exact same time how he's doing it. Well, there's such a huge edge in that, going, well, wait a second, this guy's going to buy, he's going to buy 100 bonds every minute for the next 45 minutes. Mm-hmm.
And when you say buy, you don't mean sit on the bid. You mean I'm in.
Market.
Like he's lifting. And in a one tick market, that edge is insane.
It's insane. Right. So I'm like, well, wait a second. I mean, we could get back to this, how I completely abused it with the K algo on the timers. But using this, it's like, well, all right, it's 25. Like there's 50 left on the offer. So I'm like, hey, F you, I'm going to lift to 50. People are going to need to be, are still short. They're going to join me. And now your 25 lot's going to go boom, boom, boom,
take you right
boom.
Out.
I'm like, all right, I got an edge on 50 right now. Keep buying them, because eventually I'm going to catch them.
So essentially you can lift before the timer. You know where you're going to get queued because of K algo, and you can size.
Yeah. Oh, so the K algo is not in the bonds. That's just in the 2-year and the other markets. So in the bonds, it's a FIFO out. Mm-hmm. So
got it.
I'm going to look in. There's, you know, typically there's, let's call it 900 to 1100 when I trade. But as soon as you go up there, it usually drops to 800. Now, I always expect I'm dead ass last. Like, I always figure that's I'm the last fill. Now
I call that the bond special, man. They always back of the queue special.
But a lot of times when the market it jostles a lot, you know, like it goes to 700, then it drops to 300, and I'm like, drop to 300. You can go up to 1,000. I'm within the first 300 now.
Right.
I don't care.
Yep.
I mean, and that's why I do OCO. I don't want to touch my outs. I have zero interest in managing my out winners. Mm-hmm. I want OCO to do it for me.
Your job is to get in
and scratch
at an opportune moment and to scratch, assuming that there's a aggressive participant behind you that's willing to lift through your out.
So like back to the K algo, like on month end. So this was one of my better trades. I can still picture this day, like exactly how it happened. The 2-year, this is before people really got big in the 2-year. And I had a lot of inventory in the 2-year. Like I could put on size. It would, I'm not going to tell everyone what I could put on, but it would blow your mind what I could have on. So all of a sudden, one day it's the close, it's a month end. And there's a guy, he's buying 500 to 1,000 lots, like every couple seconds. And I'm looking, I'm like, there's only 1,000 left on this offer. And there was only like 15,000 on the next tick up. So I'm like, screw this. I put my size in on the offer. I lifted. Somebody, they went up, bought 2 1,000 lots. I sold like 1,500 and it was, I mean, it was sick what I made. I mean, in like 3 seconds, I think I made, I don't know, it was like $35,000 or something.
Jesus.
Oh, I can tell you stories of doing the other way too. Don't worry. I could say they're a little higher than that. You know, when you lose, you go, oh my God, that's a great one. Hey, tell you about a couple fat fingers in the Fed funds that were pretty nasty.
I mean, as a retail trader, I think my biggest fear in the bonds market is it's a one tick market, right? So I am usually a passive participant because I can't afford to pay that spread, right? Like, I can't afford to give up a tick, pay Terry his commissions, and then maybe have like a quarter tick, you know, or whatever, like a one tick edge over my strategy once I, you know, factor in my win rate and all of that stuff. So it's interesting to hear that you're willing to cross that spread, essentially give up a tick, right? Because your thought process here is that you're sort of like front running the flow of the market. And like you said earlier, like, you have an idea of that, you know, we should go from, you know, like today with the ZB went from what, like 19 to 120s or whatever. You have an idea that that's like sort of where we're going. So you're trying to ride that move, tick up, tick up, tick up, sure, tick up. So you're willing to basically like cross the spread in a one tick market. I mean, that's, I guess what I'm saying, in a one tick strategy, right? You're giving up a tick to start. That's kind of a lot, right? So you have to have a pretty good read of the participants that are coming with you.
Yeah, I'm not really giving up an edge though. Like, I, the amount of times I literally catch the turn is, I mean, it's sick how many times I can catch the turn. Like, I'm catching it as it's going bid or offer.
So it doesn't down tick. It doesn't down tick.
It doesn't down tick against me. No.
Gotcha. Because that's essentially your loss is a down tick. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey, if I'm wrong, you know, if I'm early, I'm like, oh shit. Like, a lot of times if I'm early, I'm already, I've already offered it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, shit, I'm early and I might not be right on this. So I'm on the offer right away. And that's where I have to be quick again, because a lot of times I'm on that offer right away. Well, if I'm scratching it, OCO's putting in an order underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I have to be able to delete that. You know, I got to cancel that order because I don't want to fill on that one. Right. That's a passive. You know, that's a passive order. I don't want to give up the edge like that.
Makes sense.
Especially if I think I'm wrong.
So I got a question about the seat that you got then. How did you get that? And if Flurry wanted to try to get the commissions down on his three tick strategy he was talking about earlier, what does he need to do to get on there?
Well, if you could lease, I mean, I want to say an AM board of trade, it's got to be under 50K right now. I'm guessing you probably buy, you can lease an AM for $250 a month. You lease it for $250 a month, you'd be at about $1 a round turn.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
$250. It's a cheap seat.
$250
a month. Yeah,
that's quite reasonable.
They're not. I mean, it's. I don't want to say it's a worthless seat to me, mm-hmm. but it's a worthless seat. Like, it's not like it's an asset to me. Like, right. I have it, but it's not that. Mm-hmm. Like, at one point, it was. I don't know. It was worth $500,000.
Jeez.
At one point, I mean, I bought it at. I think I bought it at $180.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I can go back to 2004. I mean, I paid $1 million in commissions that year, $900,000 in commissions.
Right. Is that with or without the seat?
That was with the seat. Oh, yeah, no, I could. Yeah. I mean, I traded a lot. I trade like I'm not shy. If I like, I'll trade.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a different time. I mean, that's when there was the black boxes were out there. That's when the bonds looked like the 10-year. It was 2,000 to 3,000 up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was scalping 1 to 200 lots. I mean, it was like, and you know, so there you go right there. It's like, well, wait, if you do 100 trades, 100 lot each, make on 8 of them. I'm like, dude, that's 800 ticks. That's 24,000. Right. I'm not paying 24,000 in commissions. I'm not even close to that. And that's just making on 8% of my trades.
Right.
God, so damn, that's why I was like, you know, that's why you could say, well, 5%. And I'm like, yeah, 8%. I had an awesome day. 5%. I still had a good day.
Right.
Well, one of the things you said, I think you kind of commented on a tweet of mine too, where it was like, I'll share exactly the charts I'm looking at to see this, but like, you couldn't trade what I'm like, how I'm trading. And I know you don't mean that from a place of like, oh, you know, like you can't do what I'm doing, but it's because the skill, I'm assuming it's the skill of scratching and managing the strategy that you've sort of created or deployed into the market is not easy. Like you said, you're taking 10 trades, eight of them are scratches, one of them's a loss, and two of them are a win, or whatever it was. That is the challenge, right? Like identifying all the stuff, and you could show somebody that, right? Here's the chart, here's how I see it, here's the sound, here's that. You know, do it for 20 years and maybe you'll figure it out as good as I am. But the skill is in managing sort of that in between, and which ones are going to go, when you need to stop, when you need to take the full stop, and when you need to try to scratch, I assume, is what you were kind of alluding to in that comment.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to when I was working for Chip. Like nobody, I entered 10 million contracts in a year. Like just the ability to put in 10 million contracts. So over a 3-year that I worked for him, I did 30. Like I don't personally trade 30 million contracts in a year. The year I referred to, I did like 5 million round turns. You know, and don't get me wrong, that's a lot. But
okay, thank you.
I mean, but it pales into comparison to what I was doing for Chip. I mean, what I mean when you can't see what I do, like, dude, I've entered so many contracts, it's not even funny, you know, on TT. Like, I've entered a lot of contracts. It's not me being cocky. It's not me being condescending of anyone. I mean, I'm the first to say there's 1,000 traders smarter than I am. I'm not a smart guy, like, in terms of where the market's, like, hey, structure this, do this. I'm like, hey, I have my thoughts on the funds. I'm usually always early. I don't enter with my full position because I could trade around a bad fund position. Mm-hmm. If I put a weighted butterfly on in the funds, because I don't think, I'm pretty adamant the Fed's not going to cut.
Right.
I mean, I've been on that for 6 months that the Fed's not cutting this year.
Thanks, too.
But that's what I think. But I got into a fund trade at the end of December. And I put in half size. That thing was 30 grand in my face the first month. But as if I would have just kept the original position on, it was 30,000 in my face. Mm-hmm. But I traded around it because I still had more size. And I traded around it and I made probably 40,000. And all of a sudden, you know, I averaged up my position and ended up making on it. It wasn't a great trade, but I could trade around a bad position. Mm-hmm. Like I'll scalp around it. And people say, well, how do you do that? Well, the funds are different to me than the bonds. Like you can't really scalp the bond. I mean, scalp the funds. You can trade them. There are times you can scalp them. But for the most part, it's a position trade. And it's like banks. Like I have an opinion on the market. I don't think the Fed's going to cut. This is a spread I'm putting on.
Right.
Yeah,
but I'll always be early and I'll never go on full size right away, because if I went on full size, I'm not going to blow out, but I'll lose my max that I want to lose on the trade.
Right. Well, man, we're starting to run a little bit long. I don't want to keep you up all night.
I don't.
But we do have one more request for you. I think somebody wants to get a story about Baldwin, if you have one. We've heard some stories about Chip. If we got like an old pit story or something you can tell.
Well, I can tell you that's how I got my job, was Tom Baldwin with Chip, because Chip had a EC clerk, and that guy, Tom Baldwin, offered him the EC clerk. He offered him a job. Baldwin did. And he went back to Chip and Chip matched the salary. So then the guy went back to Baldwin and then Baldwin upped him again. And he went back to Chip and Chip said, F you, you know, I matched him one time. I matched
greatest,
one time, but
greatest FU of your life there, right?
Like, yeah.
Changed your life.
Again, you know, that opportunity was presented to me, but Baldwin, oh my God, there's stories of Baldwin. I mean, there was an unemployment with Dave Ryan that, you know, they didn't know what handle they were trading. So Dave Ryan's like, hey, I got to sell 1,000 at 30. And Baldwin's like, okay, I'm 108.30 bid. And then Dave Ryan's like, hey, I need to buy 1,000. He's like, I'm at 109.30. Sold. I mean, $1 million right after unemployment. Literally flipped $1 million. I mean, nobody knew where the market was.
Oh, my God.
There's always that Chip Baldwin relationship that they butted heads. Mm-hmm. They were both huge traders. And come on, I'm leaving a lot of big guys out. I mean, Joe Nicoforo was in there. Nobody knew how big that dude really was. Bobby Corvino was huge. You know, as a local, there are a ton of huge locals. John Yavari. I mean, these guys would take, you know, like I do a lot of contracts, but I don't really want 1,000 bonds on or 2,000. I don't want that risk.
Yeah.
You know, I'm after, it's like, hey, I grind. It's like 600, 600, 600, 600. It adds up.
Right. Right. All right. Anybody else have any other questions before I wrap this thing up?
Oh man, I could talk trading all day with you two, man. But I just want to say thank you, man. I really appreciate you. One, sharing on Twitter. I can't call it X. Sharing on Twitter and you know, the content you're putting out. Just like sharing some of the experience and the insight. Being willing to come on with us, you know, and just share some of the stuff, man. Just really, really, really can't say thank you enough. And just super impressed with one, your knowledge of the markets. Two, your humility. You know, it's just really cool to see and very inspiring, you know, as a group of guys kind of just trying to figure this thing out. So thank you.
Yeah. Anytime. And you know what, I'll shoot you a text. I'll teach you how to read the bonds. Like I'll shoot you a private text or DM. It'll blow your mind because you're going to put it on a chart. You're going to put it on a chart and it's going to blow your mind when I show it to you.
I've already got homework written down for,
I was going to say closing my DMs to everyone else. What did he send you?
You guys want to know? I don't mind sharing, but it's interesting. It's an old pit trick.
Yeah.
And it still works to this day.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah, man. Thank you so much.
I think 2 year needs to come spend some time in the old NASDAQ. That's what I think.
I'll show you a NASDAQ trick or two.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I like my money in front of me where I can see it. That NASDAQ just moves too fast. Go. I'm like, it's like, it's green, right? Great. Like, yeah, yeah.
I'll show you how to make it disappear if you want.
We're all good at that.
Yeah. I have that skill set from crypto. I'm awesome at that.
Right.
That's so funny.
All right, folks. So I think that's going to do it for today's episode. I'd like to say thank you, Baba, Banks, Flary, and heartfelt thank you to 2 year for jumping on here, especially not really knowing who much about us, just coming on to share some of this with four strangers. I know that's not an easy thing to do.
You guys were great.
I appreciate that. Anytime you wanted to do something else again, man, you just let us know. Please, 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 if you're out there listening, show our panelists some love. Check out their links in the show notes. Remember, you can check out our combined Discord where there's less crypto bros trying to get your money. And you can trade with the Vonta boys every Friday morning on the free side. You can heckle us live on these recordings, or you can even participate in a little cash poker game after we wrap. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully as impressive as my March Madness bracket looks. But until then, help yourself to that 5-star rating like a Walmart delivery service helps himself to your fridge, and have a great week.
Later.
Bye. Killed it.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.